The show that makes Mark Latham look like a sensible insider.
Conga line of suckholes.
You're getting into the realm of evil.
Triple M, Radio Chaser.
Yes, Reese and Charles, we've negotiated. They're allowed back on the show. My name is Donovan. Look, grab Becco is doing Drive this week. Becco, you might as well, if you've got a minute or two, you were the one who was only here on time for the show. I just grabbed you in the hall.
I'm happy to help.
Thanks for coming in.
No, my pleasure.
You might have some thoughts on this. So Becco's on the air this afternoon.
Dom, we're right here.
We're right next to you. No. Come on, brother.
I've always wanted to work with Becco. He's like really good.
He is really good, but we're here too.
It's a pleasure to work with the guys from Chaser who couldn't make it on the TV show. I'm just...
Wow. Well, that's awkward. Back in your box, Becco. Becco's sacked. I was on the TV show. You just had to look very hard to see me. Anyway.
Well, you know, like on those American shows when they show the credits, when they just go about a billion miles an hour, when they just go...
It is true. Yeah, every episode of The War on Everything has the Chaser, and it's got the five people who are on the show, plus Dom Knight. And the great thing about it is no one ever asked who I was. Anyway. One of the founders, thank you very much, as is Charles. We unleashed this mayhem upon the world. Now, look, there's been a lot of dark news in the world. We'll talk to Kevin Rudd in a little while about North Korea. Normally when we say we've got a politician, it's a joke. We've cut up their audio or something. Yeah. No, this is the actual guy.
Yeah, and this is his area of expertise too. I mean, he's particularly with China and that whole region of the world.
Foreign policy guru. So he's going to give us his thoughts on that. But the good news is some people in the world are having a good time. Some people are having a wonderful time, in fact, having a party. And they're not people you normally associate with partying and partying hard. No. Headline in The Australian today, police raid gay orgy at Cardinal's Vatican apartment.
Yes.
I'm not making that up. That is actually a headline that exists. And just to be clear, this had nothing to do with any Australians who may or may not be returning to Australia on legal charges.
And on my headline is, drug-fueled orgy broken up by police in Vatican City.
And can you imagine being a Vatican police officer? You've got so little to do ordinarily. Like, you're sitting there, you've got the occasional tourist who, brings food into the Sistine Chapel or something. And this is big. This is senior people in the Vatican. And it was an apartment belonging to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which looks at very serious, basically the crime-stopping part of the Vatican.
No, it's the department whose duties include dealing with clerical sexual abuse.
It's a bit of a worry. And the paper that they've actually, that is reporting this, and I'm not making up the name of this paper, it is Il Fatto Quotidiano.
And quotidiano means daily.
It does.
Yeah, so the daily fat.
It could be the daily fact. I'm translating it your way, Reese. The daily fat. They don't have a lot of daily fats cracked at the Vatican. But here they
do. But when they do.
And I love this. The Oz says, the incident is symptomatic of a difficult period for the Pope. You're damn right it is. If your papal cops are having a drug-fueled orgy in a Vatican apartment.
And wait, Dom, it gets better. The cardinal who's in trouble, who has in fact been sent to a detox in secrecy following the raucous party, his name is Cardinal Francesco Cocco Palmerio. Yeah.
I think it's actually his secretary who got done, but the key cardinal.
It's his apartment.
What's his actual name?
His name is Cardinal Francesco Cocco Palmerio.
And it's
his apartment.
He's been recommended for a promotion to bishop, but this is likely to affect that. You're kidding.
Yeah, I love that the Vatican's such an equal opportunity employer. I mean, admittedly, if you're a woman, you've got no chance. But if your name is Cocco Palmiero, it doesn't hold you back from becoming a cardinal. I think that's lovely. What colour smoke emerged when they appointed Cardinal Cocco Palmiero?
Marijuana smoke, clearly.
I think from the apartment, yeah. So, look. It is. Let's look at the bright side of this. People are having fun in the Vatican. I imagine that being a cardinal in the Vatican, it's generally pretty serious work. Well, the secretary's having a party, a drug-fueled orgy, no less.
Well, look, and it's not uncoincidentally, I have decided today to become a Catholic.
Oh,
Charles!
That's not fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's right.
What was it that twisted your arm?
Yeah. This exact story.
So it
just sounds great.
I thought it might have been a coincidence.
It's got everything I love. Drugs, orgies.
Palmerio.
Right. Daily fats.
Charles, if you play your cards wrong, and I mean really, really, really wrong, you could be Cardinal Charles Firth someday. Radio Chaser. Triple M. Guys, you know I'm the wanker of the team. It's been very clearly established.
It's pretty harsh.
So I'm just going to confirm that. But last night, I went to, I went to Belfast Street Theatre and I saw a play called The Rover. Bloody funny. It's one of the best things I've seen in a very long time. 3 hours long. You don't even notice. People get nude. It's hilarious. Yeah. It made me think, Reese, what awesome fun it must be being an actor.
Yeah.
Like, I look at those guys performing, some of the Chaser guys doing a play at the Ensemble at the moment.
Yep.
I'd love to have a crack at it. Like, wouldn't it be awesome?
Yeah,
it would. How do you get those jobs?
Well, how... I can tell you how you don't.
What's happened?
I went for an audition yesterday. It was a callback. So it's a very long process. You know, you go, you do auditions and then you get a callback for the final hurdle.
Yeah, final hurdle.
The final hurdle. Like on Australian Idol where they have the finals and you come out and you sing your big song. Mm. I might as well have just gone into that audition room and taken a shit on the carpet.
Oh! Like, did the role require that? Was it Titus Andronicus?
No, it didn't.
Were you playing a Catholic cardinal or
no,
something?
No, I wasn't playing. There was no drug-fueled sex orgies in this room.
That was the after
party. This was just the most horrible experience in my professional life. Well, I'd had a very frantic day and I had my daughter with me and I'm trying to sort of, you know, wrangle as you do at school holidays.
Yeah, you did a show crazy. Here, you rushed off to prepare for this thing.
And I'd had to learn about 50 versions of this song and finally they'd chosen this one version of this song and I'd been running it and running it and running it. I got there, there's the pianist, there's a giant panel, PJ Hogan, very powerful people in the room. I started my first song, I got one word wrong and it threw me for the entire audition.
No.
Oh. And suddenly I was just like... sweating like a kid at a Rolf Harris Christmas party.
Oh,
I was just, it was so bad. Like,
but you're such a sort of accomplished actor. Like,
you've done this before. Like, you've done a million shows.
I've done millions of auditions before. I don't know why. I was just struck by, I don't know. I blame Trump. I blame North Korea. It was just horrible.
I don't know what the show is you're auditioning for, but I do know a movie directed by PJ Hogan, who you mentioned.
Yes.
So I think we can guess. There's something coming up. I won't say. Say what it is. I think I've figured it out.
You've probably figured it out.
Yeah. Let's just say classic Aussie movie coming to a theatre company.
You're terrible, Muriel.
And so, Reese, were
yes,
you terrible?
I was.
Yes, I was. So that's literally what the whole panel went.
You're terrible, Muldoon.
So Reese, you're telling me that if I wanted to become an actor and have a crack at this myself,
don't ask me.
I'd actually have to pass an audition. Like, I'd have to actually do
a
some
number
acting.
Of auditions.
Oh, I'm screwed then. Oh. Radio Chaser, Triple M, Charles, Reese, and Dom. Now, look, it's a scary time in the world. North Korea has tested an intercontinental ballistic missile. It's a scary time. It's a real concern. A lot of people are really wondering, could this mean some kind of war? Now, someone who is undoubtedly one of Australia's leading foreign policy experts, our former Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, has agreed to talk to us about this, a really serious issue. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us.
G'day. How's it going in Sydney, New South Wales?
It's going pretty well here, but the rest of the world doesn't seem to be going so well, Kevin. It's Reese here. Hi, how are you?
Good, mate. Hanging together.
Yeah, good. I was just wondering, now, we do know, what do we know for sure about the ICBM test? Because Northern Korea have claimed that it was the best test they've ever had, but should we believe them?
I think the big change is this. Over the last 5 years since Kim Jong-un's been around, they've conducted about 86 missile tests. This is the first one, which is, let's call it a long-range missile. Technical term, ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile. What does that mean? It can reach for the first time the continental United States. That's Alaska. And if you look at the range, which is 5,500 kilometres plus, it could also reach northern Australia. But here's the other point we should bear in mind. Having a missile with that range is one thing. The North Koreans, we do not yet have any confirmation that they've been able to miniaturise a nuclear weapon to stick on the top of it. That may be some time away.
And why are they doing this?
Well, their logic, if you listen to it, as in my job here in New York as president of a US think tank, is to ensure their own regime's survival. Having looked at what happened to Saddam Hussein and having looked at what happened to Gaddafi in Libya, is that they need their own independent nuclear deterrent to provide a threat against the United States ever taking their regime out. That's their logic. I'm not sure that's the best way to secure their regime's future. In fact, it's a very dumb way to secure your regime's future because it frightens the hell out of everybody else.
And
you ask what drives it, that's their core logic.
So we've got, in Kim Jong-un, we've got an unpredictable dictator on one side and we've got arguably a quite unpredictable president on the other.
How does the rest of the world deal with this situation?
Well, look, there are three core players here. One's the North Koreans, who are just proceeding down a technical path, which they've made a lot of progress on over the last 5 years, with both missiles on the one hand and nuclear material on the other to stick on the top of it. The second big player, of course, is the United States. Their stated policy under Obama and previous presidents, and including President Trump, is that they will not tolerate the North Koreans having a nuclear missile capable of reaching the United States. The third player is China, North Korea's next-door neighbour. And North Korea is 100% dependent on China for oil imports to keep the wheels of its economy turning, and almost solely dependent on China for its access to convertible currency. So the diplomacy hangs on this. Can the Americans leverage the Chinese to use financial and energy influence to cause the North Koreans to stop their nuclear program? That's where the game's up to.
Kevin Rudd's with us on the line talking North Korea. Now, China, as you said, a huge player in all this. Trump's made it very clear on Twitter he expected them to do something. And we know you're a particular expert on China. What can China do to rein in North Korea at this point?
Well, it's partly what I said before. There's a historical relationship which goes back to the days of the Korean War between 1950 and 1953, where the Chinese under Mao saved, you know, the North Koreans' bacon. So there's that. In other words, a close political relationship, but strained in recent times. What's the second thing? That's what I said before, is that the wheels of the North Korean economy turn on the basis of Chinese oil, crude petroleum, refined petroleum, aviation fuel, etc. If the Chinese were to turn the tap off, or partly turn the tap off, that's what I call significant leverage. Suddenly, you'd have North Korea starting to turn into darkness. And then thirdly, North Korea's ability to buy stuff in the world means it's got to have convertible currency available to it. And it does so presently largely through the channels available through the Chinese banks. So if the Chinese turn the tap on those latter two things, then there's a real prospect that it would force the hand of the North Koreans to at least stop the testing program they've currently engaged on.
Let's hope they can figure out where that tap is.
Kevin, my 8-year-old son, we were listening to the news on the radio this morning, and he actually asked me, you know, is there going to be a World War III? What do you think?
No, there's not. There is no interest on the part of any regime in the world, that is the United States or Russia, who possess these massive nuclear arsenals to go to war with each other. Even if, for example, military aircraft, the United States and Russia were to collide with each other, which is increasingly in prospect, given the number of near misses we're having over the Baltic and Northern Europe and over Syria and Iraq in the Middle East, it is highly improbable that it get triggers into anything approximating a nuclear exchange. So tell your 8-year-old, no. On North Korea, in our own region, this is where we've got to be careful about how we go about applying diplomatic leverage through China on North Korea. I think the worst-case scenario, and it's very bad for South Korea and possibly for Japan, is that if we tripwire into an accidental conflict on the Korean Peninsula, that could turn into a second Korean War. But we're a long ways off that.
Charles, Reese and Don with you. We've got on the line Kevin Rudd, of course, former Prime Minister and Foreign Minister, now heading up the Asia Society Policy Institute in New York, so still very much a player at the top table internationally. I'm just keen to ask, Kevin, what's your life like these days now that you're away from the daily grind in Canberra?
Oh, sane, and with considerably less day-to-day scar tissue.
It must be weird for you, though, like keeping in touch with things back here. There must be an awful lot of deja vu for you, particularly this week.
No, I actually don't follow much of day-to-day Australian politics because every time I dip my head in, it all seems to be much the same.
It really is. Yeah.
Tony Abbott certainly seems to have gone full rogue. Have you been across that at all?
Yeah, bits and pieces. But someone asked me this on ABC Radio the other morning, I think, what I thought about it all. And look, you know, on the big policy challenges, the National Broadband Network, National Disability Insurance Scheme, National Health Reform, these sorts of big challenges, climate change action through putting a price on carbon, I look at Abbott and I look at Turnbull, it all just seems to me to be a bit Tweedledum and Tweedledee. So I really don't dig into the day-to-day stuff, but I look at the things that we launched when we were in office, like National Broadband Network. So how to stuck to the bloody plan.
What are we, 46th or something?
They ruined it.
Your bloody immune. The copper's not working out at this end, Kevin Rudd. Now, you wrote a book with Rhys Muldoon.
Tummy tickled by Rupert Murdoch, and Murdoch and News Limited didn't want National Broadband Network competing against the Fox Cable movie network in Australia.
Ironically, they've just launched an online movie viewing platform, so that might not have worked out well for them. Now, we were saying the other day,
well,
you wrote it.
Some strategic vision it would have been. So, but it would have been, I won't say done and dusted, but it would have been about a year away from being done. Fibre optic, 100 megabits per second to the premises. That means to the home, to the office, to the hospital, to the school.
No, and it would have been amazing. Like where I was living, they actually sent a letter out just before Labor got unelected saying you're about to have NBN. The Libs get in and suddenly they tear up that plan. And it was like we were so close to having NBN. Like it would have been proper NBN as well.
The great what if. Now look, Kevin.
Never forget the fact in the 2013 election, I remember, is that when Turnbull and Abbott together launched the coalition's NBN policy, so at Fox Studios, owned by Murdoch.
Oh, yes.
Like it was a wholly owned subsidiary to protect the News Corporation bottom line. Who loses out? Poor punters.
I'm getting a sense you haven't caught up with Murdoch recently when you've been in New York in this conversation.
I think that's the story that you won't hear reported in Australia, the Australian. But Kevin, you wrote a book with Rhys Muldoon, a children's book, didn't you?
Yeah, it was shortlisted for the Nobel Prize for Literature.
And that damn Bob Dylan just nudged us out.
Jasper and Abby and the Great Australia Kerfuffle, if I recall.
Wrote a song, for God's sake. I mean, our book, Rhys, would have been, you know, right out there.
Exactly.
Is it still set? Like, do you still get royalties from it?
Rhys, do we still get royalties for this book?
No, the royalties, in fact, Kevin, all go to the Children's Hospital in Melbourne.
And does it sell? Like, does
absolutely.
Buy it?
Yeah, it sells. Oh, right. But the Royal Children's Hospital get all the money.
Oh, what an idiot. Yeah. Why'd you do that?
Now, look, philanthropist.
I still get copies to sign, so I assume it is being sold.
No, excellent. Very good news. Now, look, there's a big conflict, of course, here in Australia that you're very familiar with that comes about this time every year.
Yes.
Rhys has been following it for us. State of Origin, of course.
I have nothing to do with it, and I'm not to blame.
Now, Kevin, I'm just wondering if you could, using diplomatic language, because, you know, the world, we're not seeing enough diplomatic language currently in the world. I'm just wondering if you could use diplomatic language to explain to the Blues why it's in their best interests to lose Origin 3.
What I'd say to all ardent Blues supporters is there comes a time in the history of nations when you actually need to recognise superiority for what it is.
Oh.
It's dressed in a maroon outfit, and if you've got heroes like Jonathan Thurston, guys, there's just no hope. So just get ready for a bloodbath next week up in Brisbane. That's diplomatic.
Very diplomatic.
That's not very diplomatic at all.
I'm feeling preemptively burned already. Kevin, thank you so much for your time. Lovely to speak to you.
Thanks so much, Kev.
Okay, thanks, guys. Radio Chaser.
Triple M. Now, look, you might have heard that the digital station that we offer here is back. It came and it went. It was really popular with a bunch of people. And it plays kind of slightly older rock, not the kind of 90s stuff that we play a lot.
Sort of 70s and 80s rock, isn't it?
It's the stuff that, you know, everyone gets and jumps around to karaoke. So, look, the thing is, I thought, and no offence, guys, but I always like to kind of just get a few more strings to my bow. I thought I might audition for Triple M Classic Rock. Like, not that I don't like working with you guys, but you commercial radio, you need options, basically. So I put together a little clip of me doing some back announcing and forward promoting, and I just thought, like, I wanted to give it that kind of classical feel. Mm. Like, I used to work at the ABC, and at one point I was invited actually to audition for Classic FM.
Oh, right.
Ooh. Yeah, with your kind of best of Beethoven and Mozart. So, look, I might have misunderstood what Triple M Classic Rock actually is.
Oh, dear.
Here's what I sent them. Tell me what you think.
You're on Triple M Classic Rock, and that was an adagio composition in E minor by Hetfield and Ulrich. Nothing Else Matters. performed by the composers with their Metallica Quartet and the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra. Coming up, we've got a wonderful choral work featuring the London Bach Choir with the Rolling Stones Chamber Orchestra. Also on the way, a charming little string quartet by Lennon and McCartney. So keep it locked on Triple M Classic Rock for the best classical music in rock.
What do you think, guys? Do you think I'll get the gig?
No.
I've got to say, I did actually find it kind of catchy. And
do you find it at least soothing?
It's certainly soothing. I think Smooth FM is...
Well, I'll probably just get a job at Classic FM.
Radio Chaser. 104.9. Triple M.
Time for the nation's favourite radio segment.
Cat's pyjamas or...
cat's piss.
Three stories from the news. Our panel of Charles and Reese will tell you whether they are cat's pyjamas or cat's piss. Now, the first story comes from Sydney and from the Daily Telegraph. And thank you to Becco here at Triple M for tipping me off on this. An extraordinary thing. There's a pop-up streetwear company called Supreme. They open these stores all over the world. There's one in Bondi, and they did a deal with Louis Vuitton. So they're selling this bizarre, like, you know, those LV bags and stuff.
Oh, wow.
They're selling LV gear to skaters, and among them, a heavily branded LV red and white skateboard carrier that costs $71,000. Would you pay for Louis Vuitton skatewear? Okay, so the whole thing.
So what a skater obviously has to do is just skate down, I don't know, Pitt Street Mall, snatch about 70 handbags along the way to go and pay for this skateboard bag.
Yeah, that's
who's paying 71 grand? Like 71, Avril Lavigne, skater boy?
Unbelievable.
No, you got to look at it as an investment. You can't, you know, the average skater can't afford a house in Sydney anymore. So what you do is you buy a handbag and that's your investment in your future.
Well, so, I misjudge it. I thought this wasn't at all a thing anyone would want, but the queues have been insane. People have been complaining about the, like, I think anything that
they
sold out of virtually everything at the Bondi pop-up store.
Yeah, someone queued for hours and was complaining in the media, I saw. Because he could only find a backpack that cost $6,000 for his daughter. That was all that they had left.
I know. It was really cheap. It was one of those cheapo $6,000 bags.
Would you queue up, Reese? You're looking a bit incredulous.
I am absolutely incredulous.
Why weren't you in the queue for your daughter?
Ixnay on the order day. Don't mention bags and a girlfriend who loves bags. I'm just amazed that people pay that. That's insane. $71,000.
So you're saying cat's piss, are you?
Absolutely.
I'm saying cat's pyjamas.
Wow.
Why?
No, because it's an investment.
And
they'll increase in value. You buy 71. There's not that many $71,000 bags in the world.
Well, that's true.
Imagine if that bag got snatched. Particularly how one fast that, you'd be running, chasing them.
Well, imagine if Chappelle Corby had a $71,000 bag. Hey, if you have queued, by the way, 133-53, I'd love to know what it's actually like down there. Like, why would you queue? Anyway, tell us. Now, McDonald's here, they've come up with a plan to stop drunks fighting at their restaurant outside. And look, I might audition for this as well, based on what we had earlier. They're playing classical music.
Oh, right.
Because what happens is this is from news.com.au, people brawl out the front. And they've tried it, first of all, in Glasgow, of course, a place known for its brawls. Apparently, in the car park and outside in the mall, if they pump classical music, no one wants to fight there.
What were they playing before? Were they playing Eye of the Tiger or something?
Yeah, exactly. No, but what if they started playing Wagner?
That's true.
They'd go to war against each other.
Exactly. It's just apocalypse now.
Yeah, so you've got to choose the music carefully, I think. There, not a bad idea. Finally here, this story comes from Tasmania. We're giving away a trip there later in the show.
Yes.
Can't wait to find out who wins that trip. Now, two men have been charged with circulating counterfeit $50 banknotes.
Yep.
This is from the Daily Mail's website. In Tassie, that they're slightly smaller and lighter than the regular notes.
Right.
And to try, because it's quite hard to fake Australian money.
Yes, it is. It's considered the hardest in the world.
But they're getting good at it. I've seen some fake ones where you just go, wow. I would just totally accept that.
Well, did you see them in your own basement, Charles?
Shut up.
Looks to say, not that good. Like what they did, because if $50 note's got the little window there, little plastic window, it's got a white border and some white stars on it. They did that bit with liquid paper. Look at that. They've drawn the stars on. with liquid paper. Oh, cat's pajamas or cat's piss? Can that be better than that, or do you reckon people would actually?
No, that's totally
take
cat's
them?
Piss. But I'm not sure if you remember when the first $100 note came out, and you could literally just photocopy it. It was just grey and
gray
white. The grey one. And people just photocopied it.
Even with black and white photocopier.
Like no colour in it, no nothing. It was just like, that was cat's pyjamas. But no, using white out.
Who
come
even
on.
Has white out anymore? Like who even uses paper? I reckon it's pretty impressive. Good stuff, guys.
People who sniff it. People used to sniff it at
they
high
did,
school.
It's true.
Yeah. I think, look, I'd still accept that.
You would?
Yeah. A bit of liquid paper. Oh, you just accidentally painted some liquid paper on the thing.
Right. I spilt some liquid paper in the star pad. It's perfectly normal. So if you do want to buy a Chaser quarterly from Charles, who edits the thing, he's taking count as $50. You heard it here first.
They're Charles Firth $50 notes.
Okay. Pretty shonky. Yeah, pretty much everything branded Charles Firth, as opposed to $71,000 like LV, it's complete cat's piss. Triple M. Radio Chaser. Yes, now look, as Kevin Rudd was saying earlier on the show, Kevin Rudd, friend of the show, former Prime Minister, you might have heard of him. He was saying that things in Canberra don't really change very much. Leadership stoush after leadership stoush after leadership stoush. And it seems as though Tony Abbott is in the role of the challenger, the person who's coming up and just making things difficult for the incumbent. And so we thought that in the event of another Tony Abbott prime ministership, which is certainly possible, we just want to refresh your memory about our former Prime Minister. So we've got a bunch of helpful facts here, haven't we, Charles?
Yeah.
That's right. Tony Abbott holds the record, did you know this, for losing the greatest number of news polls in a row. He's currently helping Malcolm Turnbull in his attempt to break that record. Fact.
Did you know that Tony Abbott's favourite band is Lloyd Cole and the Commotions?
Fact. Did you know that Tony Abbott was actually once a fan before that of AC/DC? And then he heard it was a slang term for being bisexual.
Fact. Did you know Tony Abbott is a renowned sports person? In 2013, he completed a triathlon involving 3.8-kilometre swim, 108-kilometre bike ride and 42-kilometre run in just under 14 leadership challenges.
Fact. Yeah, speaking of Tony Abbott in sport, actually, every year he goes out on that poly pedal that he does. Now, look, it's a great thing. It raises money for charity. It raises a lot of money, but it's totally not worth it for a week of Tony Abbott in Lycra.
Fact. While at exclusive Riverview School on Sydney Harbour, Tony Abbott in a science class built a nuclear submarine, which he parked at the school jetty, and it is a complete coincidence that the school gave him a Rhodes Scholarship.
Fact. Tony Abbott served for 1 year and 362 days, but it felt like 1 day and 362 years.
Yeah, Tony Abbott once trained as a Catholic priest, people might know. He actually enrolled at a seminary in Manly. Yeah, he had to give it up ultimately, as we saw in the news yesterday. There are just too many drug-fueled gay orgies in the Catholic Church these days.
Fact.
Tony Abbott's granddaughter's name is Ardani Joy.
It took me a second to get that one.
So Tony Abbott is hoping to get back to being Prime Minister. He's told colleagues that his first act will be to pass the 2013 budget.
Now, some have described Tony Abbott as Australia's Donald Trump. I think the comparison fits. He's a bit of a tough guy, likes undoing the achievements of his predecessor, and always talks about how hot his daughters are.
Fact. Tony Abbott is well known for his morning surf. In fact, Tony Abbott has spent more time in the ocean than any other prime minister, except for Harold Holt.
The guys from that team who did that thing that you maybe once liked years ago. Triple M Radio Chaser.
Where this huge news just in from the motoring world. We just saw this actually flash past on a TV in the studio. We wanted to tell you, Volvo, the Swedish car brand, has decided in a couple of years' time they're going to stop making petrol-powered cars. It's going to be only hybrids and electric cars coming up. What an extraordinary thing. So we really are at the verge of having electric cars. And have you ever driven an electric car? We used to have a Prius, and apart from all the people saying we were wankers, it was quite fun to drive.
Well, one of the funny things about electric cars is one of the first difficulties they found is that people actually need to hear a car sound.
Yeah.
Like if it's silent, it freaks people out.
It's silent
feels
but deadly.
Like,
the Prius on electric mode.
Yes, exactly. So they need to actually have a recorded sound of a kind of car sound.
Not a bad idea.
I went over to Atarman last year and did a test drive of one of those Teslas, the Model S or whatever it's called, like the sedan one.
Yeah.
And The thing about them is they go like the clappers.
Yeah, they accelerate so quickly.
And what it is, it's a completely different form of driving. So there's no, at no point, you push down the thing and it just keeps on accelerating. There's no point at which the engine has to sort of go, you know, as it changes gears.
Yeah, it just keeps going.
It just keeps going.
Like a golf cart. Like a golf cart.
Yeah, it's like, yeah,
like a really fast golf cart
going at 180 kilometers an hour.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you'd think an electric car would be really slow and a bit wussy, but no, they're incredibly fast.
And the dealer obviously knows that what you're actually wanting to do is test it out at really high speed. And so he takes you down. There's all these in Lane Cove, there's all these leafy streets that are just totally abandoned. Yeah. And he sort of goes, you know, you could just let loose now if you wanted to. You know, you could floor it. And it's so much fun.
But what does the engine do? Because in a regular car, you floor it like a sports car and it goes,
it just does it. It just like
extraordinary.
Yeah, wow. And you're right. It's totally silent. It's the weirdest experience. And the other thing is, because there's no drivetrain, like there's nothing in the middle of the car. It's just a flat board. It's like a driving box. And you actually have to pay extra. You have to pay like $1,000 extra to have something in the middle where you can put your stuff.
That's so weird.
Yeah. It's the weirdest car.
It is bizarre. I mean, they can't make these cars quickly enough. I was reading the other day that Tesla is so behind on their orders. They've, I think, taken pre-orders for the cheap one. What's it called? The
Model
Series
3.
Model 3 or something?
Yeah, anyway, the new one, it's like $35,000 in the States. Yeah. So really getting affordable for some people. And they've got like 300,000 pre-ordered and they can only make like 20,000 a year. So it'll be a long wait till everyone gets it. But look, Charles, it's not just in the electric world where Volvo are innovating. Like Tesla, they've got some self-driving technology. Have you tried that out?
That's right. I've actually been testing Volvo's new self-driving technology for the last couple of years.
Exciting stuff.
They gave me a review copy. And
you're definitely the person I would choose to test a car for years, Charles, for literally years. You're the guy.
No, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Here, listen to me having a test drive of it. So I'm here to test out the new Volvo self-driving system. It's an amazing piece of tech, but is it right for Australian driving conditions? Car door closed. As you can hear, the new system employs state-of-the-art artificial intelligence. So you just tell the car to drive and it does the rest. Okay, car, drive.
Certainly. Please say the address or choose from your most visited destinations.
Choose from most visited destinations.
The most popular destination for Charles Firth is the Wristy Wrist Happy Endings Massage Parlour. Would you like to go there?
Just the chops, thanks.
Certainly. Driving to the shops now. Would you like me to park outside the chlamydia, thrush and suspicious discharge clinic like last time?
No. Just the shops will be fine.
Certainly. I sense feelings of shame and guilt. Would you like me to erase that event from my memory?
Yep, that's a great idea.
Erasing 29 entries for sexual dysfunction and treatment centres.
We should probably pick up my wife before we go to the shops.
Certainly. According to her latest Facebook post, she is currently at her boyfriend's house.
Her what?
Her boyfriend, Raoul. That guy she keeps visiting late at night when you're working late.
What are you talking about? Since when?
Calculating. There are 375 entries listed under booty call in the last 18 months. Would you like me to read them out now?
God, no!
Reading entries. 12th of August 2016, 5:45 p.m. You had an argument with your wife, and she said to Raoul...
Oh, God! F*** me!
Correct. That's what she said.
Radio Chaser.
Triple M.
Win a trip overseas.
Today's Mania.
Yes, today is finally here. We're giving away a weekend in Tassie. 2 nights accommodation at the Mac One Hotel, Superior Waterfront Room, plus return flights for 2 from Sydney to Hobart. Now, Reece, you've stayed at the Mac One Hotel. You paid for it yourself.
I did.
You loved it.
I absolutely loved it. It's the newest hotel in Tasmania, and I would argue probably the best.
Now, they call it a storytelling hotel, which is kind of what inspired all this week of yarns to give the prize away. Yeah. What does that mean?
So what it means is what they've got on each room has its own story. So when you open your door, on the front of the door is a short story about a lot of Tasmanians I'd never heard of with very unusual tales about them.
So each room's dedicated to a different Tasmanian and you get to hear their story and kind of engage with that. before you catch the ferry out to Mona.
Yes, indeed. That's exactly right.
So in the spirit of that, we've asked our three winners from Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday to come up with a little story about a Tasmanian, whether it's someone very famous, something someone they happen to know, whatever they've interpreted that as. And the best story, as judged by Rhys Muldoon, expert storyteller and actor, will win the prize, Charles.
Win a trip overseas to Tasmania.
Yes.
It's going to be awesome. Our first caller is Jeff, who is our winner on Monday. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. How you going?
Good.
Are you pumped? Are you excited?
I am very excited. It's awesome.
All right, let's see how you go. Take it away, your story about a Tasmanian.
Well, yes, I actually do security for a living, and I caught up with a guy from America who came out on tour once, and he told me that he had a very embarrassing situation where he was under the belief that Tasmania was part of New Zealand. So when he actually decided to go down there, he thought he had to speak Maori. So he rocked up and started looking around and talking to people, and highly embarrassed himself while he was down there, but loved it so much that he moved to Australia and ended up living down there, and he's down there now.
Oh, wow.
Was the band The Violent Femmes by any chance?
No, it wasn't, unfortunately. It was Fooey's, actually.
How extraordinary. So he thought there was sort of a West Island of New Zealand called Tasmania.
I don't know if someone took the piss out and just said to him, look, yeah, there's a bunch of Maoris down there. It was part of the land of the white cloud, but he believed it. Rocked up and just went, oh, it's part of Australia. And he was so embarrassed, but mate, cool friend, and he loves it down there. And he's become an immigrant to Tasmania.
That sounds very cool. A lot of people move to Hobart. Jeff, thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Jeff. Excellent.
All right, our next contestant, the Tuesday winner, Sean from DY. Hey, Sean.
I've got a couple of Tasmanian friends, but one I'd like to tell you about, my mate Les. I met Les on a kibbutz in northern Israel.
Wow.
And we got along like a house on fire there for a couple of months. And then I went to do a ski season in Austria. So Les came over with me and he tried to pick up a job, but he was having all sorts of problems. Just trying to be a dish pig with the dishwashing. couldn't get any work. And finally went into a restaurant, came out with a big smile on his face. And I said, how'd you go? And he said, well, I did a bit better than dish pig. I'm the head chef.
Oh, that's brilliant. There are a lot of famous restaurants in Tasmania these days. I've been down there recently. It's pretty great. What kind of restaurant did he end up doing? What did he cook?
Well, they showed him the menu and he said, well, you know, it couldn't be that hard. He actually had to cook for the owner, his wife, also the ex-chef and his wife. He put together a spaghetti bolognese and it did the trick. So they hired him. The only problem was he still had to get his paperwork in order for a work permit. So we got those travel magazines, cut out some sort of letterheads. And did some discerning references for himself.
Oh, wow.
ended up getting the work permit. For 8 years.
I don't know if I want to try this spaghetti bolognese or not, Sean. Thanks, that's a great story. Our final contestant here in the competition to win an overseas trip to Tasmania is Donna, who was our winner yesterday. Hey, Donna.
Hi, how are you?
Donna, what's your story?
So my story is about my grandma. My grandma actually lives in Tasmania, and she's 85, ultra-conservative. You've got to be very careful about what you say around her. And she... But she won't hold back. So she'll tell you exactly what she thinks about everything.
Yep.
And so when I went to visit, I looked up on Google, what's the thing to do in Tasmania? And I found this amazing museum called Mona. And I'd heard nothing about it. Didn't know what it was, but it's definitely not a place you should be taking your ultra-conservative 85-year-old grandma.
Yep.
And so we take the boat across to go to the museum. And we get in and... I can't find her. She's wandered off. And then she's staring at this wall and she goes, Donna, can you come over here a second? What is this? And she's staring at a wall that is sculptures of women's lady parts.
I've seen that wall. That is so funny. It's massive. It's pretty confronting. So how did she react?
She's just like, I didn't, I was, I do I have to explain this? And I said, oh, Grandma, I think it's like, you know, it's modern art. And I mean, I really love the museum, but definitely not with Grandma. And she was just like, oh, so it's, oh, it's women. Oh, okay. Let's have a look at them all then, shall we? And then she made me walk with her down the entire row and look at them all. And it was just I just wanted to die. And I just didn't want to be there. And she's like, look at them all. She's like, what do you think about this one?
Welcome to Tasmania. Here's a map.
And it was just, so I was on Struggle Street, and that was the start of the museum. And it was the whole thing. Like, I want to go back, just definitely not with Grandma.
That's a pretty great story. Reese is the judge of this. He's the one who's been to the Storytelling Hotel. Reese, what do you think?
Okay, I think we have a very clear winner here. I think Donna is going back to have another look at the wall of vaginas. And I'm telling you, Donna, they have the most beautiful olive oil at the Mac One. Yeah. You will have as much olive oil as you need. As you mentioned yesterday, you won a bottle of olive oil that didn't contain olive oil. You can have olive oil.
I'm sure there will be olive oil.
Thank you so much.
Congrats, Donna. You've won two nights accommodation at the Mac One Hotel in a superior waterfront room and return flights for two from Sydney to Hobart.
And Donna, could you do us a favour? And once you've had your trip and you've been there, could you give us a call back and let us know how it was and how your trip was?
Of course I will.
Fantastic.
I'll go with my husband, Simona, this time, not with my grandma.
Sounds like a great plan. If you want to check out the Mac One, it's macq01.com.au. You can check all the stories they have on the website. Congrats, Donna. Have a great trip.
Have a great time.
Thank you.
Radio Chaser. Triple M.
Yeah, Charles, Reese and Dom with you. And now, look, I grew up, as I mentioned yesterday, in North Sydney, kind of lower North Shore area. Back before it was really expensive and fancy in water views, for some reason people didn't want to live there when I was a kid. It was really cheap, the house my parents bought. It was great. Really nice place to live.
I think people still don't want to live there, Dom. Like, it's the North Shore.
Well, they talk funny over there.
Yeah. It's north of the bridge. It's bizarre. Felicity Wilson is the new MP for North Shore. And people might remember when she ran in the by-election, there were just mini scandal after mini scandal as it was revealed that her claims about where she lived and whether she lived in the electorate. Well, as you're saying, people didn't want to live in the electorate. She didn't live in the electorate at various places. And then it comes out that yesterday there was a story about her saying she had 2 degrees from uni where she actually only had one. And she's come out and apologised for the errors that she made. Well done.
That's right. She's apologised for all those errors that happened to, you know.
They always seem to paint her in a good light,
they
these errors.
Yeah. Yeah. There's never an error saying totally failed high school.
Forgot to mention my Nobel Peace Prize that I won, that I really won.
No, yeah. But she's now, this morning, she's apologising. She said that she won't do it again and that she is willing to swear that on the Bible, which, according to her, she wrote.
Radio Chaser. Triple M.
Earlier on the show, we were talking about North Korea. They've got the ability now to launch missiles anywhere in the world, just about. Friend of the show, Kevin Rudd, said that doesn't mean they've got the nukes, so that's something to cling to, but it is pretty scary.
Yeah, yeah, and he's sort of saying what there is a possibility of is an all-out conflict between North Korea and South Korea. We might see a second Korean War.
So a lot of scary stuff going on in the world, very concerning. So another friend of the show, in fact, top US spy Jason Bond, has been dispatched to take care of the security threat that's terrifying just about everybody around the world right now. And Charles, I believe he's on the line now.
Jason Bond, have you managed to infiltrate the most worrying nuclear power in the world?
I have indeed, but time is running out. A madman is in power, and he's willing and able to launch nuclear Armageddon. That's where I come in. My job is to protect the world from this erratic leader and save humanity from a nuclear winter that would almost certainly mean the end of the species.
So in your opinion, we are on the brink of nuclear war?
Absolutely. There's a clock on this. The timer's already been set, and I have less than 4 minutes to disable the nuclear bombs.
4 minutes? Should we call you back?
Oh, not at all, Charles. I'm going to go in and save the world while also conducting a live radio cross to a lunchtime program in Sydney, Australia.
Jason, could you run us through what you're doing?
Well, the leader has a coterie of operatives who surround him 24 hours a day. I somehow have to get past them. Unfortunately, the presidential compound is monitored around the clock. Even the air conditioning ducts are monitored with laser sensors, and they're usually a very convenient way in. Therefore, I am donning my scuba gear and entering the putrid sewer several blocks from my target. Here we go.
Jason, are you sure there isn't an easier...
Now I'm wading through a sea of turds and hypodermic needles. To be honest, it's one of the less dashing things I've ever done. I just hope nobody flushes. Whoa, ho, 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 ho. Big shout out to Nando's for supplying that one. Spicy. Now, I'm climbing up the sewer pipe that leads directly to the president's office.
Are you nervous?
Oh, Charles, I don't have nerves. I only have a patriotic duty, a love of country, and a scuba mask full of feces. Okay, now, I'm just going to slide through the S-bend. Okay, I'm out. And the tyrant is across the other side of the room, watching television.
Tonight on My Kitchen Rules...
I can see the briefcase of nuclear codes, and on it is a timer. I've got just 9 seconds before it's too late. Oh, wait, I was reading that upside down. I have just 6 seconds before it's too late. And while I was saying that, the timer has gone down to 3.
Hurry!
Sorry, Reese, what did you say?
Hurry, don't worry about me, just get across there!
I'm sorry, Reese, you're breaking up there. Can you please repeat that?
Just get across there before the timer runs out!
Oh, right.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm sorry, Mr. Trump. I can't let you have these anymore.
Give them back. They're mine. I can launch a war if I want.
Wait, where are you, Jason?
I'm in the Oval Office, stealing the nuclear codes from a madman.
You're not in North Korea?
Come back. Come back here.
Oh, God.
Give them back.
Trust me, this guy's far more dangerous.
Security, Ivanka.
Radio Chaser.
Triple M.
It's Lunchtime Radio's Night of Nights. Welcome to the Chaser Awards with your award-winning host, Dom Knight of Knights.
Well, thank you very much, pre-recorder Charles Firth. Anyone can win a Chaser Award for anything. Reese Muldoon, please kick us off.
Well, I'd like to kick off. My award is for nominative determinism.
That's a long fight.
Everyone will know
what that is. Yeah. Let me explain what that is.
Dictionary, Sydney.
So what that is where people gravitate towards jobs that fit their name, like Dr. Sawbones. Yeah. You know, that sort of thing.
Obviously, Dr. Sawbones, 133353. What does it feel like to be called Dr. Sawbones?
Yeah, well, obviously we had earlier in our Vatican scandal, Cardinal Cocco Palmieri. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, but my favourite one would have to be, and this is a true story, that a man in Ottawa has just been arrested for indecent exposure whose name is Donald Popperdick.
Oh, come on. Tell you what, if he got together with Cockapamio, it would be extraordinary things they could do.
Okay, my Chaser Award goes to Ray Cox.
What?
Come on.
Who, for, this is honestly true, for 11 years has, under the name Stallion83, like that's his username.
No, stop it.
No, this is honestly true, has been the top scoring scorer on the Xbox game score. Across all the different sort of things.
Well, he's the top scoring scorer on the Xbox game score. Oh, what does that even mean?
You know, like,
he's got
the high score for everything.
The aggregate high
score. Everything
scorer.
Together. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Right. And he's held that position for 11 years.
Wow.
And then he got married, went on a honeymoon, and he's lost it. So,
that'll teach him to have love in his life and a relationship.
Yes, so there you go. That's an award.
What was his name again?
That's more a warning.
Yeah, and well, he actually tweeted saying, you know, he didn't actually mind breaking his 11-year winning streak because he was getting some sex. Now, that's honestly what he said.
I do feel sorry for people with names like that, though. Like, what was his name? The Cardinal Cockapamieri. It really wasn't good. It reminds me of the former Minister for Gaming in New South Wales.
Richard
Honourable
Face.
Richard Face.
Yeah.
Oh. But I thought you were going to say Race Matthews.
I feel very, very sad for Richard Face.
No, but you know that he actually liked to go by the name Dick. His nickname.
You still can't go past Dick Pound.
If you're a Dick Face, you may as well own it. Yes, and that brings back memories of Misty Hyman too.
See ya.
Triple M. Radio Chaser.